That's right. Welcome to the dark. Once again, here we are with A Scott in the Dark. And hey, I'm actually in my own studio. I'm at home. I can't believe it. I've done all of these shows from all the great different conventions and such that I've been to, and I've had a wonderful time doing all that. But now I am back in my cozy little office/studio, so, you know, the normal stuff that happened in so many of my episodes. You'll probably hear Lucy the demon dog barking in the background. I do have a new microphone and a little bit different setup, so, you know, hopefully we'll have an increased level of quality and professionalism in at least the sound of the show. I can't necessarily promise anything on the content itself, but we'll definitely see if we can make it sound a little nicer. So what are we going to talk about on this episode? Well, this is here we are right now in the crux of the Halloween season. You know, haunters are probably not even going to have time to listen to this because they're going to be running around crazy trying to put all of the last minute spatters of blood and touches of pustulant ooze on their creations. And so what in the heck am I doing another episode right now? Well, I actually am doing it simply because I needed the respite. I love doing these shows, and this season is no different from any other. I'm incredibly busy, but I'm incredibly busy in a very different way. Since I've become an independent contractor, I've been able to do a lot of different kinds of experiences, and especially haunted experiences. You know, a lot of people know that from 2015, 2016, and 2017, I was doing the Vault of Souls here in Tampa, and I was concerned that this year I wouldn't necessarily have a haunt to call home, but as luck would have it, I'm actually consulting on three different haunted attractions right now, and that's what prompted me to do this particular episode. What I wanted to talk about in this episode of A Scott in the Dark, sorry, I had to do that voice, it's Halloween. I used to do that all the time for Hollow Scream at Busch Gardens. You know, it was anytime someone would call and we'd start talking about the event, and then all of a sudden that voice would come out. Yeah, I'm that guy. Sorry. Anyway, the whole reason that I wanted to do this particular episode is to talk about the different levels or the different layers of haunts. I mean, let's face it, there are a ton of different haunts out there for a ton of different audiences. And so this show is all about the many levels of haunt. Now, I'm not talking about things that are more scary, less scary, more bloody, less bloody, what is too much, what is too little. What I'm going to talk about in this particular gathering are the different audiences that haunt can appeal to. And I see it, and again, as with all my shows, you may or may not agree, and that's completely fine. You may have different experiences, which is completely fine. I'm just going to share with you my opinion because, well, for the first time in a long time, I'm the only one on the show. So I'm just sitting here by myself in my own little office studio, and I'm going to share my opinions on the many levels of haunted attractions. The way I see it, there are four basic audiences for haunt. You can do a kids' Halloween event. You can do a Halloween event that targets tweens. You can do a Halloween event that targets, I call them teens plus. So basically 18 to 35, maybe 40, maybe 55, maybe 65, depending on how much you're into it, maybe 85, maybe 95, who knows? You know, I always say I'm going to be haunting long enough that eventually my body can be used as a prop. You know, I'll be decomposing in the corner. And then there's also the more adult, the grown-up Halloween event. And what's interesting is everybody, every different one of those demographics, views Halloween differently. I was lucky enough to grow up in the era where Halloween meant trick-or-treating and going out and raising some hell and having a good time doing it. We didn't have to worry about, you know, can kids be out after dark? We didn't have to worry about, is there going to be a horrible drug in the candy. We didn't have to worry about all of the, you know, somebody coming up and kidnapping us. We would go out right after school on Halloween, and you, our parents, you know, would give us our curfew time. And of course, I grew up in Chicago, so when it was October, it was dark. I mean, it was dark like at 4 o'clock, and we'd be out until, well, depending on what the curfew was, and that changed as I got older. So, but we would be all over our neighborhood and all over adjoining neighborhoods, getting as much candy as we possibly could. I was not a toilet paper tossing hooligan. I wasn't that kind of kid, because I was a fat kid and I was much more interested in getting candy. So I didn't want to waste time or money tossing toilet paper on trees and shaving cream on cars and that sort of thing. No, I just wanted to spend as much time as I could getting as much candy as I could, filling up that damn pillowcase. Oh, can I say damn? Did I just say damn? Damn. Anyway, filling up that pillowcase, trying to get as much candy as I possibly could. So, you know, that was a fat kid's Halloween. The interesting thing is it was probably the most exercise I got all year, was walking around all of our neighborhoods. But, you know, so I have a very fond memory, a very, you know, sort of warm and fuzzy memory of what Halloween is all about. As I think I've told many people before, and I think I've mentioned it even on the show, is that as a kid, I was a total wimp when it came to scary stuff. I was fascinated by it, but I wouldn't even watch horror movies when I was extremely young. It wasn't until, oh, there's Lucy. There she is. Yeah, I have her outside the studio, so she's out there barking, going, hey, I want to come in. I want to be on the show. But like I said, I wasn't a huge fan of horror films when I was younger. It wasn't until my friends tricked me into watching Creature from the Black Lagoon that I realized, you know what, there's a zipper in that costume, and I could be scarier than that, that I became really fascinated with creating haunt and horror. Then I went through the phase where I couldn't get enough horror films, which was, you know, everything from... Actually, I like the cheapest and sleaziest and cheesiest and bloodiest and dumbest horror films for the longest time. And then I got into, you know, the more intellectual things. Became far more posh. But all of us, depending on where we fall into the various demographics, all of us have a different view on Halloween. And I think the point of this show, with the many levels of haunt, is to say that no matter what level you're at, or what demographic you fall in, or what demographic you identify with, I'm not going to force you to be categorized into your age demo. If you self-identify as a tween, no matter how old you are, then by all means, please do so. I'm not going to tell you how you must be categorized. But what I wanted to do is, since I have had the great pleasure of working on haunted attractions for each one of these demographics, I thought it'd be fun to kind of break it down and talk about the individual needs of each one of them. Because each different level of haunt requires different stuff, okay? So let's start with kids. You know, if you're doing a haunted attraction for the wee ones, for the little ones, I think that's great. I think it's really important because it trains the next generation of haunt goers. It keeps Halloween to be a vibrant holiday, and it's something that, you know, families can do together no matter how young your kids are. Now, I don't have kids other than Lucy the demon dog, and she will not go trick-or-treating. She just wants to chase cars. So I have to enjoy my kid side by working on kid events. Years ago, I did a little bit of work, not a ton, but a little bit of work with SeaWorld Spooktacular, which is a wonderful child's-based event. It's all about fantasy. It's all based, of course, on being under the ocean, because it was at SeaWorld. And it's just a ton of fun for the wee little toddler ones. I've also done some work with Tampa's Lowry Park Zoo on their Halloween events over the years, written animal shows for them. And then this year I actually was able to do their pre-production. So I kind of came up with the 30,000 foot view of what the event could be, so that they could kind of get everything bid out. I did not work on the installation. I just worked on the pre-event stuff. And they're kind of they're kind of straddling two different demographics, the kids, and then the next one we're going to talk about is tweens. But let's stick with kids for a moment. And they want to keep as much kid-friendly stuff in their experience as possible because that is their target demo during the day. They're great with the stroller mom, so they wanted to keep, they didn't want to lose that when they went into their night product. So what they're doing is they're focusing a lot on fun and fantasy and pretend and dress up and fairy tales, you know, that side of Halloween. Sort of the purest and simplest. And it's so much fun to walk around an event like that, whether it's Spooktacular or now the event is called Creatures of the Night. It's so much fun to walk around and see these little guys just pretending, and they like a little girl walks around the corner and she sees a fairy or a princess and her eyes light up, or better yet, she's dressed like a fairy or a princess. And or he, once again, not going to, who am I to, you know, assign gender roles to people, but for those of you who know me, I'm nowhere near the guy to assign gender roles to people. But so these kids have these moments of pretend and dress up. And when a child pretends, they are so into it. You know, watching a kid put on a Halloween costume for the first time and going out there, they actually become those characters. They're not just wearing clothes that look like those characters. They become those characters. So what you want to do is, if you're developing a Halloween event for kids for that age, include elements that give them places to do creative play. Give them places to live as those fantasy characters that they want to dress up as. You know, you can throw in the moments of playful scare. You know, one of the things I love to do with little kid events is to just put hidden audio that makes it sound like there's either trolls or playful critters hiding in the bushes or shrubs, so that there's nothing that jumps out, but there's just a voice that will say, "Hey, over here!" And the kids will look and try to find it, and it becomes this sort of game of hide-and-seek, which I guess is kind of cruel on my part, because they're never going to find them. Yeah, I guess I'm just mean to kids, aren't I? But anyway, it gives them a playful scare, and it lets their imagination, you know, kick in. Being a kid who grew up trick-or-treating, I think candy has to play an essential element in any child's targeted Halloween event. Again, former fat kid, so I'm like, yeah, give me the candy. Because there's something fun about getting, quote-unquote, something for nothing. And, you know, whether it's trick-or-treat or trunk-or-treat or going out to different candy stations at a theme park or a zoo or a museum, I really think that if you're going to do a kids' event, include candy. And yes, because we have parents out there who are concerned about their children's health, as well they should be, because they are their parents. I am not, but they are their parents. There should also be healthy alternatives, and obviously never anything with peanuts. On a side note, by the way, you know, Southwest Airlines no longer serves peanuts on their airplanes. I was actually flying the night that they did the very last service of peanuts on Southwest Airlines. And, you know, I totally understand the issue of allergies and that sort of thing. But anyway, side note. So the other challenge that you have, I think, when you're doing a kids-only event is families are very rarely just the little tiny toddler munchkin ones. Quite often, they will have older brothers and sisters who will want to come. And that bridges you kind of into the tween audience. So you have to have something that's at least compelling enough to keep the 11-year-old girl from rolling her eyes and going, "Oh my God." Or the 11-year-old boy, "Oh, this is dumb. This is lame. This is so lame," as he starts to text his friend. So you have to have a couple of things in there that are at least cool to look at. They don't necessarily have to be terrifying, but they have to be cool to look at. Something that's visually compelling that or technologically advanced, so that those kids have a lot of things to look at or do. One thing that I think is kind of fun for that tween audience is something that Gantam Lighting has done called Z-Tag, which is basically a giant interactive zombie game that uses pin-on badges that light up different colors. And you can either be a zombie, a human, or a doctor. And if you stay, if you get in front of, if you're a human and you stand in front of a zombie for more than, I think it's 30 seconds, and you're 3 feet away from them, your light starts to flash and you can be transformed into a zombie unless you find a doctor who can cure you. So it becomes this sort of interactive game that gets people running all over your event. Again, I think that's something that's cool enough for the tweens, or at least gives them something to do while their little brothers and sisters are waving at the pirates and the fairies. So it just something to think about. But it's called Z-Tag, and I know a lot of you are familiar with it. Gantam Lighting does a bunch of demos at various trade shows and such. But I just think that's a great option if you're doing a kids event and you want to add something for the tweens. The other thing that I think is important to look at with kids events is because they aren't as dark from a lighting standpoint, because kids are afraid of the dark. I've seen more kids not go into a haunted house because it's dark than not go into a haunted house because there's a giant hulking monster with an axe. Little ones are very much afraid of the dark. So keep that in mind. If you're going to do a kid-friendly event, instead of doing dark, replace it with saturated lighting. Even black light works. So do something with really dark jewel tones so that it still has playfulness, it has fantasy, and you're sort of giving them the bridge into something that's going to be darker. But you are going to have to make sure that your scenic and your costumes are incredibly detailed, because they're going to see them longer, they're going to see them in brighter light, they're not running away from them. Another idea that I've seen that SeaWorld used to do that I thought was really fun is basically a hay bale maze. They created a maze out of hay bales that didn't have a top on it and that grown-ups could see over the top of, but the adventurous little kids could go on their own. So mom and dad could always see the little ones walking through the maze, and there'd be cutouts of, I don't know, whatever characters happen to be in the maze. They can be cutouts of goofy monsters, or they can be, I think the one that SeaWorld did was Sesame Street characters in their Halloween costumes. So, they were just two-dimensional cutouts that the kids would discover as they walked around a corner. But it's a training maze. It's a place to play. And once again, it reinforces that idea where kids who are dressed up can have some creative character play while they're at the Halloween event. So the next group that I want to talk about are tweens. This is that group that I call them the eye rollers. If you have any tweens, you know what I'm talking about. It's a very short demographic. They think they're ready for absolutely everything horror and haunt has to offer. And some of them are, quite honestly. But most of them aren't. And more importantly, unless you're in the haunt community and you're raised doing haunted houses, their parents don't think that they are ready. And it's mom and dad who are actually footing the bill for these kinds of haunted attractions. So you have to make certain that you give them a little bit more. Give them something that's creepy. Ghosts are always good. Monsters are always good. I would keep the gore to a minimum for tweens, but it's okay to have the threat of a monster coming out. You can do a few more boo scares, a few more startle scares. Don't go over the top. They're going to want to watch. The 11-year-old is going to want to have the chainsaw and the axe murderers and the blood spurting out of everything. And some 11-year-olds are great with that. I know some 30-year-olds that aren't too cool with that. So it just kind of depends. But generally speaking, for the tweens, keep it to monsters. I actually kind of like using urban legend for this era, this demographic. Ghost stories work really well. I think things like Slender Man, I think that would be kind of cool. Things that kids have seen, online, games that they have played, that kind of thing. And yes, I realize 11, 12-year-olds have played games that are basically, we could never recreate in three dimensions because we'd constantly be cleaning the floors. I mean, we'd need a mop and a drain system. So I get that. But I think you also have to play into the parent sensibilities as well. Give them something that's startling, but not over-the-top gory. Also, if you're dealing with tweens, keep sexuality to a minimum, because they're, well, just do it. It's a lot safer for everybody involved. Now we get into where so many people love to live in the haunt industry, and that is what I call teens plus. The teens plus are the 16, 17, 18-year-olds, all the way up to, well, for me, it's probably going to be until death. But this is where you can really go for it. This is where you can push that envelope. This is what the majority of independent haunts are. And they really, really go for it. This year, I'm so excited because I actually have two different haunts that I'm working on in this particular category. One of them is in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, which is called Dark. And it is an outdoor three-haunt experience that takes place in an outdoor... historic museum in Edmonton, Alberta. And they have done family-friendly events for Halloween for several years, and they brought me in to make it dark and creepier and really go for it. And so we're taking a huge leap, or they're taking a huge leap of faith with me, and I'm the creative director and writer for that event, so I'm really excited to spend a lot of time up there. I will be bopping back and forth. If you've been watching me on Facebook, you see all of a sudden I disappear up to Edmonton, Alberta, and then stay there a few days and then come back. And I'm going up again in October. It opens the latter part of October, so I'm really excited about that. And then I'm also doing some consulting here in Tampa. Again, they just kind of brought me on to look over stuff and help them fine-tune and polish and help them with their actors and that sort of thing for a haunted attraction called Undead in the Water. And it takes place on the Victory Battleship here in Tampa. And I think that's going to be a really fun project. But again, the idea there is to go for it. And when you go for it, that doesn't just mean be as bloody as you can. What it means is give guests something they don't expect. I mean, this is Halloween. We're out to scare people. And if you expect stuff, it's not scary. Nor does it give you that sense of adrenaline rush that you're looking for. Make sure that whatever, when you get into this area, you do something unique. You do something clever. Whether it is... set in the bowels of a ship, which I think is super cool. I can hardly wait to get my nails into that one. I think that's going to be fun. But you know, make sure that you do something that is a little bit over the top. You know, that isn't just I'm going to set up the same rooms that everybody's seen, and I won't go into the importance of a story or the importance of, you know, having a build and then some sort of falling action, because you've heard me say that way, way, way too often. What I will say is make sure you get through to this audience on a visceral, emotional level. Flip the script. Do something unexpected. One of the ideas that we had at Busch Gardens and never quite got off the ground, but I will throw it out there if anybody wants to try it someday. Do an upgrade experience where guests are picked up at their house in a hearse, and they arrive at your haunt in a hearse. And if you really want to go there, put them in a coffin. I think that these kinds of things are just, yes, I know they sound crazy, but another phrase that I'm using a lot recently is the shortest path to mediocrity is practicality. So don't be mediocre. Don't be mediocre. Raise your highs to an 11 on a scale of 10. And fill in all of the crap that, you know, people don't like, and people will remember your haunted attraction with great fondness. Fondness? I think I added an extra syllable to that word. With great fondness and terror. So raise the bar. Also for this age, it's okay to be just a little bit sexy. It's okay to be a little bit sexy with this teens plus age, this adult age. Because, well, again, sensuality is something that has always been in horror films. It's always been in the haunt industry. And not just backstage in the dressing rooms. But, and haunters who are listening, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But it's always been kind of a part of the genre. So it's okay to include that. Because think about it. This is the audience that this is a night out. Okay, so if they're, like, you know, say we're even at the mid-range of this, where people are in their 30s and they've gotten a babysitter for the kids and they're going out with their friends, they're going to have a couple cocktails before, they're probably going to have dinner, they'll probably either eat before or after, and then they'll come to your haunt and you'll scare the living crap out of them. But do something that they will remember, all right? Make it a full experience for them. Don't just set up some black walls and have a few monsters running around, because that ain't going to cut it. All right? Do something over the top. Because if you do that, if you do something that is completely strange and unexpected, you will create loyalty and they will come back year after year after year. If you screw it up, you got one shot out of them and they're gone. So again, that's really the demographic that everybody understands the most. And then I have recently discovered, you know, I mentioned the Vault of Souls over the last three years. I've discovered that there is definitely a market for the more mature haunt goer. These are folks who want some form of elegant fear. It was a great experience to do the different years of Vault of Souls, and I know that there are still people out there who experienced it one of the first 3 years, and they continue to ask me, is it coming back? When is it coming back? How can we do something like this in the future? And there are a few places out there that offer this kind of thing, but it was something that was very, very special. And who knows? I don't know. I can't predict the future. We'll see whether it's coming back or not someday in the future. If it does, I hope I'm involved, because I think it was an awful lot of fun. But the idea there is, if you're approaching a grown-up, more mature audience, you can raise your price point a little bit, because they're at a point in their life where they have that income to spend on a night, a posh night out. I always say, dial down the gore and startle, because again, usually by the time people have gotten to that point in their haunted attraction progression, they're like, yeah, I've been there, done that. Drop doors, no, they just give me a headache now. Strobe lights, yeah, lovely. No. But psychological fear, things that make them think, things that make them feel something, ghosts, paranormal works well with this age. Giving them something to do works well with this age. Giving them something to figure out works well with this demographic. And, you know, did we do absolutely everything right in the Vault of Souls? No, probably not. But we did please an awful lot of guests and gave them an experience that they've never had anywhere else. So keep that in mind. I also would strongly recommend that include, again, food, cocktails, a place to kind of start and end the night. You know, one of the things that has grown out of the Vault of Souls is a place called CW's Gin Joint, which was the last quote-unquote act of the Vault of Souls. It was a 1920s gin joint. It is now open as an incredibly well-received restaurant here in downtown Tampa. Now, I'm not taking credit for that in any way, shape, or form. That is all the Wilson Company, and specifically Carolyn Wilson, who stepped in and brought together the most incredible team of bartenders and executive chef and just invested boku bucks into creating this beautiful environment. But it is unique, and it was that uniqueness that, you know, we had that chance to kind of test it out in the Vault of Souls, and now it continues to be a ridiculously popular restaurant here in Tampa. So if you have the opportunity to go see or go and dine at CW's Gin Joint in Tampa, do so, but make sure you make a reservation, because they are full almost every night. So that's the kind of thing that the grown-up Halloween folks certainly gravitate to, and it's certainly an offshoot of what we did over the 3 years at the Vault of Souls. So you're probably thinking, am I going to now say, and I think the thing that everybody should do is target this demographic. No, I'm not going to say that at all. I think you need to find what's right for you, what works with your space, your passion, your dollars and cents, your audience. All I am going to say, though, is decide who you want to serve. decide which of these four audiences, which of these four levels you want to serve, and commit to it. Commit to it, because you can't be everything to everyone. You can't try to create an event that has, we have a kiddie thing here, and we have a tween thing here, and we have an over-the-top extreme thing here, and we have an adult thing here. Because what's going to happen is, A, you're never going to be able to communicate through marketing. You're never going to be able to tell people, what is this event all about? So you'll always be disappointing someone. You know, and you may think, well, if I'm all things to all people, then I'll have a much broader demographic. But again, if you're all things to all people, you're nothing to anyone. So decide. Be the best stroller mom and their toddlers. Be the best haunted Halloween experience for them you possibly can be. If you want to go over the top and be bloody and gory, go over the top and be bloody and gory, but don't try to dumb it down for kids. And people ask, you know, what about things like, you know, the no scare amulets that came about? Everyone has their own opinion on these. You know, where it, basically what it is, it's either a glow stick or a necklace or some places use wands or amulets or, I don't know, whatever. Something that identifies a child or even an adult who chooses not to be scared. My opinion on these is don't do them. Now, I know somebody's going to chime in on my Facebook page and say, no, these are great, and they do this, and they do this, and they do this. The reason I say don't do them is, as somebody who wants to be scared when I go to these kinds of events, if I'm in a group and one person in the group has that no scare amulet, then it makes the actors timid. It makes them not give me the product that I want from the experience. It doesn't give me the scare that I'm looking for. And I think that ends up just disappointing, you know, the people who are there to be scared. You know, they also talk about, do you want to do kids' nights? You know, maybe you do a lights-on night. I have mixed feelings about this. I understand why people do it, but I think the biggest concern is the majority of audience members do not read. And if you do this at the end of your season and somebody shows up expecting your full-blown show and you give them an actor light, brighter light tour, I think ramping down your fear, if you've been a full scare house through the whole season, I think you run the risk of people not understanding and people just not getting it and thinking, oh, well, that was kind of lame. I don't know how scary that would have been even if it were full. Now, I know there are haunts that do it and do it every year. I don't know. I think you just need to make a choice and stick to it and be the best, target your audience the best you possibly can. In fact, I would go so far as, instead of dumbing down the fear or pulling back the fear for a younger audience on certain nights or having amulets or necklaces that protect them, I would actually go the other route. I would say, there's a haunt here in Florida, Screamageddon, that has a haunt that it's a full contact haunt if you are wearing a glow necklace. So you're not dumbing down the scare, you're actually ramping it up. You're giving someone an opportunity to be even more involved, more scared. You know, a lot of haunts do lights out. You know, there's one haunt, I think it was in England, and somebody will correct me. Again, you know me, I don't have the greatest memory. Someone in England or somewhere did, on their closing night, they did go through in the dark and naked, really taking it to that next quirky level. Would I do it? Oh, hell yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. My biggest fear actually going through a house without any clothes on is that my clothes would still be there when I get done. You know, but yeah. Oh, yeah. I'd absolutely do that. And I think that's a great talking point. It's a great way to get return visitation, because what you've done is you've created a haunt that people love, and it's top-notch, and then you have a chance to do something really just brag-worthy. You know, yes, I went through the haunt in my birthday suit. Yep. And all those actors had to look at me naked. Now that's scary. So, you know, that's the kind of thing that I think you should ramp up the fear. You know, do a flashlight tour your last night. You know, turn all of your lighting off. If you've got a really detailed haunt, turn all your lighting off. Hand people flashlights. you know, let them go through in the dark and keep all your actors out there and scare the snot out of them. I think it's important to raise the bar as opposed to dumb it down. Just my opinion. But if you do that, just make sure you communicate everything clearly. Okay? So I guess what I'm trying to say in this episode is good Halloween is good for Halloween. Good haunts are good for the haunt industry. So whether you are a kitty stroller mom fantasy haunt, or you're an extreme haunt, or you're an adult elegant fear night out, that's great. Do it. But do it to the best of your ability. And don't try to be everything to everyone. You know, I think that if you can be laser focused, you'll be able to make choices based on what is best for your haunt, not what is best for your wallet. Because I promise you, if you start to think that way, you will actually lose money. In a haunt that I worked at years ago, and you'll probably figure it out once I start telling the story, we heard from our guests early on, if you're going to offer things for my kids, don't make it a nighttime event. You're open until midnight, 1 o'clock. If you're going to do stuff that is scary, then do stuff that is scary. But don't have the fun, goofy, you know, mascot kind of characters roaming around. Make a decision. Because again, when you try to be everything to everyone, you really end up being nothing to anyone. So choose your market, stick to your guns, market correctly, and just make sure that everybody, no matter what age, has something to do, something that's fun, a way to enjoy and celebrate the Halloween season. To all of my listeners, thank you so very, very much for listening, paying attention. You know, maybe even some of you are out there listening as you're putting touch-ups on your haunt, which I think is great. Go for it. I will be in and out of the United States during the month of October. I'll be here pretty much through September. Then in November, I will be at the International Association of Amusement Parks and Attractions Expo, and that is in Orlando, Florida. And I am teaching a seminar there on revenue-generating ideas for your entertainment department. So if you happen to be one of my theme park listeners and you're going to be at IAPA, come and let's share some ideas regarding using the entertainment departments to make some money. And, you know, obviously haunted attractions are one of those options, but there's just many, 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 many more. And I'm really excited to be back at IAPA. I also just recently joined two new organizations, and I'm going to be trying to find ways to attend their mixers and such. The Themed Entertainment Association, TEA, and the Florida Attractions Association. So I just joined both of those, and hopefully we'll be involved and see some of you at some of those events in the near future. And then in January, he says questioningly, January, I believe, I'm at the Special Event Show in San Diego, California. So, and I'm teaching a seminar there about doing atmospheric entertainment for large scale events and festivals. So, that's all of my plugs. Except of course, I don't think I said YouTube at all. Oh, and I didn't even videotape this show. Well, there'll be nothing new on YouTube, so go watch the old stuff, on the YouTube channel. And hopefully, if you are not members already, you will become members of our Facebook group. We welcome new members pretty much every week, one or two. They're coming in dribs and drabs. But if you know somebody or you just want to share your opinion and you haven't joined yet, find us on Facebook, A Scott in the Dark. And, you know, hopefully we can welcome you. It's a neat group because they keep sharing chatter and ideas amongst themselves. So find us on Facebook, join the group. Until next time, this is Scott Swenson from A Scott in the Dark saying, rest in peace.